Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I am Harry Brady and this is podcast number 243. Now, regular listeners will know that we've been trying to float the CelticUnderground.net website onto the AIM listing and... Do you know what? Despite having loads of people desperate to work with us and they were falling over themselves, we now look like arseholes and we can't get a nomad. But don't worry, actually listening on the AIM was rubbish anyway. It was a terrible idea. And what we're going to do now of making the press and everybody who supported us look like diddies is really a good thing. So we've not got a nomad, but apparently that's brilliant. So we're all chuffed to bits here at CelticUnderground.net. Also chuffed to bits with the work that the Celtic FC Foundation are doing. There's two events coming up. Obviously, been badgering that the golf has now taken place and been a fantastic success, as was the zip slide, which I did and was brilliant, absolutely fantastic. Anybody listening to this, next year when the zip slide comes around, get your name first on the list. Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Can't stress enough. It was really good. Anyway... I like things where you just hang on and you go down a zip slide and you don't do too much work. If you're a bit more physically active, now's your chance to do a huddle with other hoops atop Britain's highest peak in the snow in June. The 2015 Ben Nevis Huddle will take place on Saturday, June the 13th, and participants will start the climb from Glen Nevis Visitor Centre, following the mountain track route. Former captain and Mr. Celtic Tom Boyd has already signed up. What else would you expect to take part for the third year in a row? Groups will leave the centre, depending on fitness levels, to allow as many people as possible to meet at the top for the huddle. In my interesting fact of the week, with people bemoaning the snow, you're more likely to get a white Easter than a white Christmas in Scotland. So there is regularly snow atop Ben Nevis. So despite the fact that in 2013 they set off on a roasting day in the morning at the bottom, it was snowy at the top. And as I said, there's been two... Ben Nevis Climbs 2013 and 2014 have raised £45,000 to date for the Celtic FC Foundation. Minimum entry is £125 you need to raise after your entry fee. And if interested, call the Celtic FC Foundation on 0141 551 4262 or email cfcfoundation at celticfc.co.uk. That's 0141 551 4262 or C for Celtic, F for Freddy, C for Celtic Foundation at celticfc.co.uk. And there's one more thing before I get on to the meat and bones of this podcast. The Brother Walfred anniversary event. People online will already know this. If you get your Celtic View, you'll probably know it as well. Celtic's founding father, Brother Walfred, passed away on the 17th of April 1915 at the age of 74. And to mark this, the foundation will be... having a dinner at Celtic Park for 500 individuals from the city's homeless community, which will take place on the afternoon of Friday the 17th, the 100th anniversary of Brother Walfred's passing. If you are interested in assisting and supporting this event, you can donate online or text to CELT07, that's CELT07, followed by £1, £5 or £10 to 770, that's 70070. So the event, and the event, Celtic are hoping to signpost guests to other Celtic FC Foundation initiatives where possible. I'm sure you'll all agree it's a fantastic gesture by the club to mark the 100th anniversary of Brother Walfred. But enough of me, we've got a nomad to find. Oh, no, sorry, we don't have a nomad to find because that's all rubbish now. Nomads are rubbish and we didn't want one anyway. If you were aboard with a nomad, you were not very good and you were shafting the club. And now if you're a glib and shameless liar and you can't get a nomad, that's dead, pure dead brilliant, by the way. And you didn't take everybody for a ride. So that's what we are doing betwixt and between now. Anyway... it's the end of the hiatus of the international break and we're on to back to proper football and the route towards the treble, hopefully. Starts tonight, again, by the time you're listening to this, with the game against St Mirren at whatever St Mirren's ground's called these days. Can't wait to see the hoops in action again. And so we decided to have a bit of chat, myself and Lackey Moore, to discuss where we are, a wee bit about the Dundee United game, join football. Enough of me. This is him, Lackey Moore, with me, Harry Brady. I'm going underground. So, Lackey, how are you? Have you been able to get to some Celtic games recently?
Yeah, I was at the Dundee United replay with my grandson, which I thought was a terrific game. I thought the Celtic were terrific. I don't know whether the view I had... I don't like being too high up. I know you do.
Yes.
My brother raves about it. My brother's right up the top. I can't stand seeing them running around like ants. So I like to be down closer to the pitch. I know you don't see perhaps the tactical picture, but there's a feeling of immediacy when the players are up close. So we had seats in the front stand, just a wee bit above the dugout, but a decent view. And it was quite a good view. And I thought the pace of the way the Celtic played was outstanding. I really did. It was the odd bad pass, but I thought their passing overall was excellent. And right from the start, they just ran all over them. I thought it was a terrific performance. And then I saw people the next day saying they didn't think so. And I thought, what game were you at?
Oh, I don't know what game they were at because I thought we were amazed.
The four games against Dundee United, and that was the best. They just swept them aside. So they did.
Although, and to be fair, in the league game that then followed, I thought it was shooty in.
Aye, but that's the point. It was shooty in. But that night, you were still a wee bit tense. It was a cup replay. I thought Celtic were brilliant. I really did. I says to him, to Isaac, this is the best we've seen him for a wee while.
So what age is he?
He's 10.
And how did he enjoy going
to the game? He loves it. He went to the European ties, you know. Uh-huh. He was there when they beat Barcelona, so he's had some experience of it. And they're taking me to see Queen of the South, periodically. So he likes his football. But I thought they were really sharp that night. They were up for it. Yeah, and I was most impressed by the way they played. For some players, I thought, particularly Beaton, who I was beating the drum for earlier on in the season, because I really thought the boy looked a player. He was outstanding that night.
So what's your overall impression of the team over the four Dundee United games? What was your thoughts going into the four Dundee United games? And then what was your overall impression?
I was a bit concerned about the game at Tannadice because... They're a tough proposition at Tannadice, even though we tend to win. And the game didn't start well for us, really, with the stramash and Virgil going off. And then, of course, the penalty kick puts us under pressure right away. And I had echoes of the last league game that we lost, where we literally battered them from start to finish. And who was that guy? Armstrong, was it? Did he not score a goal?
Yeah.
Which put us to the sword. But he wasn't there that day, thank you. But I thought they got out of it with a replay. Well, they probably should have won it, but they got out with a draw. And I always feel when you're away from home in the cup against a good team, your objective at the end of the game is to stay in the cup and get them back at Celtic Park. Although the last couple of times against Aberdeen, that's backfired on us because we've lost both replays. But I thought that was a hard game. The replay, I thought, were terrific. You know, I think the League Cup win was fairly... It wasn't their best performance, but they were the better team by a mile.
Yeah, I thought in the League Cup, it wasn't the best performance, but you just felt Celtic were comfortable through the whole game.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And then, as you say, in the Cup replay, they just blew Dundee United away. As you pointed out, it was the pace with which Celtic were playing that was the key to it. Yeah. And you just felt that Dundee United couldn't cope with that pace, which seemed to, I felt, determine the way that Dundee United turned up for the league game.
Yes, I thought so.
They actually played the league game, from my perspective, in the same way that they played at Dundee United in the Cup once they went down to nine men. Mm-hmm. We'll just stick everyone behind the ball and hope for the best.
Yes. Yeah.
And it turned into shooty in, as I said.
I thought, particularly in the game that I was at, I thought Forrest, the number of times he burned. Who was the midfield player that was playing left back? This isn't John Rankin.
Yeah, yeah.
he just went by him like a slipstream. I actually felt sorry for him because I thought, this poor guy's getting torn to shreds here, so he's, and he's not a fullback, which is, you know, it's a hard shift.
So from your position in the main stand, what were your thoughts on the Stokes sending off, the McGowan sending off, and I also thought Rankin could have gone as well.
And Rankin could have gone. I'll tell you what happened. The night they played Salzburg, when Salzburg scored, remember the second, the last goal, there was a couple of minutes to go.
Yep.
And we'd always stayed till the end of each game because they were close games. But when they scored the third goal, was it 3-1? I think it was 3-1. We were going for the equaliser and they scored a third goal, which finished it, which was against the run of play, actually.
Yeah.
But I said to Isaac, well, we just go, even though there were a few minutes left. And we actually were home a half an hour earlier than we had been at the other games when we waited till the end.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was up on the screen, there were 2 minutes left to play, Celtic are winning 3-0. I says to Isaac, shall we go and we'll go home earlier? He says, aye, okay. So we're coming, we can hear these cheers and shouts and stuff. I didn't realize we missed a goal. Two sending offs.
A goal, two sending offs, and what should have been a sending off?
Yes, exactly. All in that last wee phase of the game. But we did, we were home before 11. And yet, previously it was half 11 when we waited for the end of the game.
Because if you can get in front of the traffic, I mean, you know, people talk about early leavers and things like that. However, for those supporters like yourself who stay a good hour and a half drive away from Celtic Park, the 5-10 minutes of being in or behind the traffic or in front of the traffic can make that half hour difference.
It does. We tweeted about it, or I texted you about that when I said about the distance. You know, I was making a wee point that people in Glasgow think anywhere beyond Bayliston is Ultima Thule, you know. Whereas people who live in the free spaces used to be right up to Glasgow.
Yes. So then there was the league game and that was comfortable. In fact, the only disappointment with the league game was that there weren't more goals in the second half.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But it was good that they capitalised on Aberdeen's mistake.
Yep.
Dropping the point. I thought, did you see the goal? The Dundee goal?
No, I didn't, actually.
It's really hilarious, because the ball's going out for a shy.
Oh, yes, I did. The guy did what Izaguirre did against...
Why on earth did he try to keep that ball in?
Well, that's what Izaguirre did at Tannadice.
He did, that's correct. He did, that's true. Yeah.
So it must be something that afflicts players when they're playing in Dundee, that they keep lost causes in to the detriment of their own team.
The funny thing is that I'm always saying to my wife when we're watching games, why did he let that go out for a shy? Because when I was playing, I always wanted a kick. So if I could keep it in, I would keep it in. So maybe there's a wee element that is...
Well, I suppose the element is because you can set up for a set piece and you should be practising your throw-ins every day, so, or you're defending of them, so you should be able to set it up. So we are now getting into the business end of the season. What's your overall impression? And based on the signings we made in February, what would be your best Celtic 11?
Well, the goalkeeper's obvious. And in the absence of Lustig, I would say probably Matthews is the best fullback going forward. But having said that, I think Effie's done really well.
If everybody was fully fit,
Lustig would be right back. Lustig would be right back. Denier and Virgil and Izzy.
Right.
Would be the back four. There's a surfeit of riches now in the midfield.
Mm-hmm.
Brown would obviously be playing, and Johansson would be playing for me, and I think Armstrong would be playing. And I'd have Mackay Stevens in it.
Right.
So that's 4-4. So you're looking for two.
Yeah.
It would probably be Griffiths and Commons.
Yeah, so, but you remember you're playing Dyla's system of 4-2-3-1. So who's sitting beside Brown? So you've dropped Beaton.
Oh, I forgot.
I knew you'd. He's your favourite player and you go and drop him. Some manager you are.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about that.
Right, I'll take you through the team then. Who are the two?
Here's a question for you.
I think Griffiths is the best one up front for at least for 60 minutes. I think he works defences. So he might. I can see why the manager sometimes substitutes him.
Yeah.
I'm always pleased if he scores because he goes off in a good and buoyant mood. Doesn't he feel as if he's been pulled off because he's not playing well? But I don't know that he lasts the whole 90 minutes playing on his own up front. And the thing about Commons is, you know, Commons is liable to get your goal, even though he may not do much else.
So your team would be the back five straightforward, the two players. Now here's a question, because you've gone back you went to games pre-70s. Have you noticed players have lost positions, have lost names?
Yes.
Like obviously there used to be a right back, left back, two centre halves, goalkeeper. Then there would be left wing, right wing. And why do we just call them the two players in midfield and the number 10 position and the two guys wide? Why are they not called a left half and a right half?
Well, we used to.
Brown and Beaton
are half backs.
Surely Brown and Beaton are a right half and a left half.
Yeah, they're half backs. They play in the half back position. They don't go too far forward and they combine together. One goes, one stays. That's the way they used to play. Unless you're a sitting wing half like Clark, who became a sweeper and not the played forward.
Who would be your right half and left half then?
It would be Brown and Beaton.
Okay. So then you've got your three,
your two wingers.
Your two wingers. And what would you call the guy in the number 10 position? Because he's not an inside right or an inside left.
Normally, it'd be a schemer. But we don't actually have a schemer.
So
when I think of a schemer, I think of somebody like Lubo Maravci or Bertie Auld.
Yeah, so...
Gallagher, who would cuddle the ball in midfield and then make great passes. Now, sometimes Stefan Johansson makes great passes. Sometimes so does Beaton. But they don't fit into the model of your schemer.
Right, okay.
He's a more energetic player than the kind of schema you're thinking about.
So you've identified, because now that you've got Beaton in the team, you've got to drop one of Mackay Stephen, Armstrong, Johansson, Commons.
Yes.
You've got to drop one of them. So yeah. Who's your three?
Well, do you move to the modern thing you've seen, the team's actually 15 players.
Well, no, but I'm going to say, who's your starting 11, and then you can...
Starting 11?
Yeah, and then
well,
you can add in subs.
I would have Beaton and Johansson take, and probably I would start with, of those players, I would maybe have Armstrong, because I think he's possibly, depends who you're playing. If you're playing your average Scottish League team, you'd play Mackay Stephens or Forrest, because they go at people and they run people ragged. Whereas Armstrong and Johansson are more like modern midfield players that are multifunctional. They can defend and they can run, and they're good footballers as well.
Now, I know we have an election coming, Lackey, but you've still not given me your 11.
Well, not really, though, because it would depend.
Right. So...
None of them, I think, are incompetent players. There's sometimes players I think, why on earth is he getting a game? But none of those players we've mentioned are like that. They're all of a similar standard with different attributes.
So your first choice 12 then are, and you would pair them, one would be dropped out of this group, Mackay Stephen, Armstrong, Johansson, Commons and Griffiths. As the four out of those five would be starting.
Say that again.
Four out of the following five, Armstrong, Mackay Stephens, Griffiths, Commons, Johansson.
Yes.
Or is it four out of the six, which would be...
Because you're Forrest.
Forrest, yes. Is it four out of those six?
Aye. You know, as I mentioned Guidetti.
Would you keep Guidetti? Now, because here's the thing. We obviously, we're approaching the end of the season and we're going for the triple and we've got one of the three trophies in the bag, but we're now looking at next season. We've got... Talk of Van Dijk, that Dyla wants to keep Van Dijk, but we all know there's a good chance he's the sellable asset of the summer. Yeah. Denayer wants to go back to Man City, and he's now played for Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
However, we'll see about that. I think Celtic are wanting to do what they did with Foster and have another year's loan with him.
Mm.
Guidetti, do you keep Guidetti?
No. I can't understand why he isn't making a bigger effort to include Skepovic, unless there's something in Skepovic's attitude at training that he doesn't like, because he is our player.
Every time I've heard or read an interview by Ronnie Dyla where he mentioned Skepovic, I don't think he's trying hard enough in training.
Probably not. And that's probably the thing. But you would have to think, well, he is on our payroll, so why aren't we making more of an attempt to integrate him into the team and see if he actually can score goals?
Yeah.
Because there's been wee flashes of play when he has been on that you think there's something there. But he's never there long enough to find out.
No, I know. And I do have sympathy with players when they come on as a substitute late in a game. I remember speaking to a player once who said, no matter how much beforehand and the manager says to you, just go on and do the basic stuff,
mm-hmm.
and you're on for 10 minutes. And you know that you should just go out and do the basic stuff, he said, but no matter how hard you try, you cannot help but think, I've got 10 minutes to prove I should be playing. You run around trying to be Pele, and actually what that does, it makes you look like a headless chicken, because you're not just doing the natural thing of moving to where you think the ball will be, and if it doesn't get there, tough luck. You're going out of your way to try and get the ball in every instance.
Mm-hmm.
And I always have sympathy, particularly strikers, when Celtic are 3-4 up in a game and he comes on with 10, 15 minutes to go, because the rest of the players are now wanting to play Hollywood balls. And we're 4-0 up and they're not bothering that much, and they're not.
Yeah.
So I have sympathy. You know, when people then say, huh, he's played, you know, 304 minutes and scored 2 goals. Aye, but how many of those were, you know, he's had 20 substitute appearances of 10 minutes at a time.
I agree with that. Especially when you said the Hollywood balls, I thought in the last 15 minutes of the Cup, after he scored a second goal, Stokes and Ezegeri were quite self-indulgent in the way they played. They did some brilliant things, some of which came off and some which didn't. But I was thinking, Basile, you wouldn't do that if it was 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, they were showboating, to use that term. And a lot of times that's the case, as you see, and you're coming on as a substitute while everybody else is enjoying themselves. It's a difficult situation for a player, any player.
So, do you think we'll hold on to Skepovic, or do you think we'll try and punt him?
Well, who would you punt him to? Who's going to buy him? I mean, he isn't even sure that he can play.
We can do our usual and send him out on loan.
He made a comment yesterday in the press conference about Timo Pukki. They asked him about Pukki coming back. Apparently, Pukki had indicated he might want to go to Spain rather than come to Celtic. And from what I've seen, these two, neither Guidetti nor the other guy, look like better players than Pukki.
Mm-hmm.
But something going on at the beginning of the season, because Pukki scored a few goals and looked quite good, but he was the one who was released and sent away into Purda, you know.
To be fair, I suspect he'd been at the club the year before. He'd not illustrated his value at the £2 million. You've got a new manager in who you want to bring in new players anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And probably there was nothing about Pukki that had jumped out to Ronnie Dyla to say, we've got to keep him. So when probably Celtic had been trying to offload him this time last year before the end of the season, or have been alerting agents to him going. So when an offer comes in, he's probably thought, yeah, fair enough, he's nothing special.
In terms of his overall impression I had of him when he was there, I would have thought he might have been the kind of player who would have responded to Dyla, this idea of improvement and, you know, hard work gets you a reward. He never seemed to me to be a truculent individual. Or a guy who went in a huff. He seemed to lack confidence at times, which for an international footballer is quite odd.
But maybe, and
it's childish performances, and as you say, Skepovic, that sometimes looks as though he's not that interested. I never got an impression with Pukki, and he's got some nice goals.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes it's just bad timing for a player at a club, and but maybe Ronnie Dyer thought, well, he's great, he's okay rather, but there's no point in wasting any time on him. And now that he's moved on, he's looking for fresh talent rather than spending a year trying to do with Pookie what he's done with Griffiths, for example. Because Griffiths was behind Pookie when Ronnie Dyer arrived.
Yeah. It's a strange, the striker situation is a strange one. I was never that impressed with Cadetti. I thought he scored some fine free kicks and things like that, and he scored a couple of goals at Love Street, if I remember. But he never struck me as being a brilliant footballer. And yet, the number of players on that wee thing they do on the website where they ask other players about their teammates, the number of players who say he's the most skillful player at the park is really surprising, because I don't see that when he's playing.
Well, what he strikes me as is I think he's got something. I do think he's got something. And I think the problem is we know the additional hard work that Ronnie Dyer wants the players to put in. And I think permanently in the back of his head, he's been thinking, yeah, but I'm not staying here. And then that's been a self-fulfilling prophecy, because he's not been prepared to put the work in that the likes of Griffiths and some of the other players, and Beaton has obviously turned things around. He's obviously not been prepared to do that, which then means he's not in the team, which then makes him even less inclined to want to stay, which blah, 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 and so on.
Yeah. It's interesting, the number of players who also he say he's the worst trainer. Him and James Forrest, regular mentions as the worst trainers.
Although I read an interesting thing about Ronnie Dyla talking about James Forrest.
I saw that. That opened a few eyes. But maybe that's the way they want him to train at the moment.
Yeah, I think there may be a danger of him going down the Sean Maloney route.
Exactly. That's who came to mind when I read the article.
You know, I've heard many ex-pros talk about the fact that once you start becoming a professional footballer, playing first team football, you're never 100% fit. You've always got a niggle or something. And I wonder if someone like Maloney or Forrest, who hamstring is their main thing, then start to become obsessed with, well, I don't feel 100%, maybe my hamstring's about to go.
Did you notice even on Saturday, was it Sunday, the international, towards the end, Sean Maloney pulled up holding his hamstrings? Did you notice?
No, I didn't. I didn't notice that.
I watched the last 20 minutes or something, and he made a run down into the right channel, and he pulled up, and it was the old Sean Maloney that we used to see. He kind of ran it off. He didn't go off the pitch. But he's very aware of his hamstrings.
But getting back to your Griffiths point about run about for 60 minutes, that to me makes sense that you would say to someone like Forrest, you know, because obviously that's what happened with Andy Tom when Tommy Burns signed Andy Tom, because Andy Tom never played a full game. I think he maybe only played one or two full games, and he was always off 60, 70 minutes. So, look, you just do what you can. We will take you off at 67, between the 60th and the 70th minute. And maybe give him the confidence to do a bit more. But, yeah, it was the comments about his injury, and Ronnie Dyer made the comment round about Christmas time about Forrest is now back from injury, but we don't want to have a player who's in for three games and then out for 2 months, so we're going to be looking at everything about him differently.
He said the same thing yesterday about Lustig and Charlie Mulgrew.
Right.
He said there's no point in bringing them back and then losing them for 3 months. He said they'll probably be back before the end of the season, but we wouldn't want to take any chances with these injuries. So I mean, that's an intelligent way of looking at it.
So you mentioned the right half and the left half position, and then you've got six from four. And one of the players that you didn't mention, because he's now off on loan, that was having a problem getting into the six from four, because the manager patently has seven from four, if you include Anthony Stokes, is Liam Henderson.
Liam Henderson.
So what's your thoughts on the Henderson loan deal? Because I've read contradictory opinions online.
Well, I think it's a good move for him. I think it's a good move for Celtic. If he goes over there and gets regular first team football, that's like Denier coming up here from Manchester City and getting regular games, because that the manager says he needs to play regularly. Coming on for 5-10 minutes, as he with Liam Henderson needs, he's too good a player for that. And he's not going to be stretched playing in youth football. So if he goes to Rosenborg, or top of the, I think they're top of the Norwegian league, and going to the championship, and gets a regular game, then it has to be good for him. The Dyla spoke about it at length in the interview yesterday, and he said that they had got in touch and said, do you have any, you know, midfield players that would add something to us that you could do without? And he said he immediately thought of him, and he said he made it clear to Liam Henderson it's not a case of going away with a view to departure. It's a very much a case of going away and developing as a player and coming back here as a first-team regular, because he says he's a very good footballer. So I think it's a good deal.
So do I. You know, if you look at what we've got coming up, we've got a Scottish Cup semi-final and a Scottish Cup final, hopefully. Yeah. And then, how many league games is there left?
I think it's eight.
Eight league games left.
We have nine because we've got a game in hand.
Yeah. So you've identified what I would say most people would acknowledge is their and the manager's first 11, 12 players. So where's Henderson fit into that? You know, people who were saying, I don't think he should have let Henderson go. But where does Henderson fit into that? Henderson's not ahead of Mackay Stephen, Armstrong, Johansson and Commons. Now, you could have an argument that he should be ahead of Stokes.
Well, I wouldn't even mention Stokes.
Yeah. You could have an argument of that, but patently, he's not an automatic first choice out of that. No. If he goes to Rosenborg and plays the spring and summer first team football, I would much rather he do that than play cumulatively two games of football with us out of the possible 11 games we've got left.
I think that was Ronnie Dyla's point. He's got a League Cup medal. He will get a Championship medal if they win the league.
Yep.
And now that Mackay Stephens and the other fella are there, he's not going to get regular games. That's quite clear, unless somebody gets injured. But it reminded me of who was the boy that went to... He went to Manchester United.
Liam Miller.
He played abroad.
He played in Denmark.
That's right. And he came back a very, very good player. And he was quite an accomplished player in that Celtic team. And they're running Europe. Remember when they played Anderlecht?
Anderlecht, yep.
He was terrific.
And then I can remember sitting with my mate when we played Anderlecht away in Anderlecht's ground. If you remember, Anderlecht went down to 10 men and still won the game. And we were raging leaving that game that established players, mature established players, hadn't stood up to the mark and played to their ability to win the game away from home for Celtic. And we were saying, based on the performances today, we can get some money for Petrov. You'd sell Petrov and start building a new team, a younger team around Liam Miller.
Yeah.
And then, of course, goes to his head, goes to Manchester United, and I suspect he didn't understand the principle of continual learning and thought he'd made it when he went to Man U.
I heard a daft story. You told me, somebody somewhere told me this daft story, that he thought that this was Ferguson's way of getting back at the Coolmore Mafia for shafting him over the horse. Remember Dermot Desmond?
Right.
He's on the horses.
Yep.
Remember the business with a horse? He thought he would shaft Dermot Desmond by taking Liam Miller to Manchester United with no intention of playing him.
It's an expensive way to shaft someone, but...
But yeah, I mean,
I actually think we've not been good in the loan market.
No.
And that what we've used the loan market for has been to bring in some players to, you know, with an option to buy. So we've got Wakaso and Tonev who are on loan. We forget about them with options to buy. We're patently not going to exercise them. But the only times we use loan deals is actually to get a guy off out of the squad that we don't want anymore and nobody will buy him. Like the 50,000 strikers that we bought for a couple of million quid in the last few years that don't work.
Well, it'd be interesting coming in this season to see who goes and who comes, because surely Bo Richter goes. I mean, he's just a colossal waste of money right from day one.
Yeah, but the only thing is he's maybe not got a year still on his contract.
Yeah, but they'll get rid of him. Somebody will take him, surely.
I don't think we're that great at... We should be paying out his contract. We should be doing a deal with someone where if it involves us doing a deal with Bo Richter to get him off the wage bill, we should do that.
Yes. So there's Tonev, there's Ricasso, possibly Pukki. Is Baldy still in the books, or is he gone?
No, he's still at the club on loan out.
Well, you see, I would get rid of all of them because they're not going
to... I would do whatever you need to do to just not... I mean, I know probably Peter Lawwell says, yeah, but we can get them out on loan and we get their wage bill. You know, look at the Newcastle deal with Rangers. We get them out on loan, and if we pay off up their contracts, it loses money and it sets an unfortunate precedent that if a player's not happy, we'll pay them up their contract to shift them on. But I just don't see the point in having them hanging around.
No, because it really does block the lineup from the development squad. Now, the other night, I think they had five overage players playing for the youth team, or the development team, that won 2-0 at Capello. Bo Richter was one of them. Thomas Rogic was one of them.
Yep.
Now, curiously, I think they say that's the first time he's played in 2 years. Who's the coach? What's his name again? Stevie Frail,
right, yep.
He said that was the first time Roger had played in 2 years. He played 45 minutes the other night at Capello. Now, I thought that when Thomas Roger came, he was a better bet.
Roger's back, that's completely passed me by.
Uh-huh. You can see him on Celtic TV in the telly. He's on their website. He's training this week. Wow. He played.
It's passed me by that we've ended up getting him back.
Uh-huh. He looked a good player. I wonder, is he a guy that if he was fit, could Ronnie Dyla do something with him? But he's another one that's...
No.
You think so?
No.
No.
He doesn't look anywhere near capable of playing at the pace of the team.
No, that's probably true. The pace is the key.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone said to me that Beto had no pace. I said, he moves the ball on at pace.
Yes.
That's what the rest of them did. You know, what's the point of having fast players on the ball?
You know, I'm still flabbergasted. I genuinely had completely passed me by that Rogic was back at the club.
No, he was playing the other night. And Callum McGregor was playing the other night.
Yeah, Callum McGregor. To be fair, Callum McGregor went out on loan and we brought him back and Ronnie Dyla gave him a go.
Uh-huh. He did well when he was on loan.
Yeah, to be fair though, he was on loan in what, the third tier of English football?
Yeah, but he did well. I mean, is that better than playing for one of the Scottish minor league teams?
Oh, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think we...
has been brilliant at Hibs.
We should be sending them out to get some first team experience because that's how you properly develop. However... Yeah, and I think we've done everything right by Callum McGregor. I think we've sent him out on loan. He's developed, he's played first team football and developed. He's come back in, and he's been in, we've given him first team football, but you can clearly see he was in the first 11, then he was in the first 14. Now he's patently on the fringes of the first 16 players, and a nice enough boy. Looks like he could be a very good player playing for... I think he could play for any team in the SPL other than us.
Yeah. Now, you see, if you're talking about sending players out alone, I know Peter Lull doesn't think like me, but I would have packed all of these teams like Queen of the South and Falkirk and Hibs with very good Celtic youth players to ensure a certain other club didn't get promoted.
Yeah, well, they seem to have... they don't need help from us to prevent themselves from getting promoted.
The last couple of weeks have been good for them and bad for everybody else.
yeah, everybody else has been shooting themselves in the foot a bit. And however, talking of them,
we're talking about using the loans.
No, I was going to say talking
about using loans to develop our players and just sending off guys that we should never have bought in the first place.
Yeah.
Or regret buying. In the first place, and it hasn't worked out for them.
Yeah, but then you also then have to start questioning your scouting system, that how many £1 to £2 million strikers have we brought in who've not worked?
Yeah, we talked about that, and I wrote an article about it, about when they came in, no one complained. The only one I would think that was, I wondered why they bought Skepovic, given the hassle, why they proceeded with the sale or with the buy. Whereas other players that they brought in, like Pookie, like, I didn't know anything about Baldy, but he looked like a project, you know, and they seemed to think there was possibility of him becoming a player. Some of the other players, who was the boy that played against us in Europe last year?
Bangura.
I thought he was a good player when he came.
Well, I have never seen any aspect of Bangura that made me think he'd be a player.
Don Knight, he ran as ragged in the European.
No, he didn't.
He did. He knocked that big pansy fella Wilson all over the place. Kevin Wilson.
Nah, but Kelvin Wilson wasn't a very good player. I don't know.
He was a terrific player.
Yeah, and I couldn't see why people rated him at all. He was a centre-half who fell over when people blew on him.
Exactly.
I never rated Kelvin Wilson as a Celtic quality centre-half.
Folk will laugh. I was going to say he also gave a fair hard time.
He never once looked like he was going to threaten our goal.
He did give him a hard time.
He didn't score.
He's playing on his own.
Baldy, Pookie, Skepovic, Bangura, Murphy, although Daryl Murphy's banging in the goals for Ipswich. Rasmussen. I actually thought out of all of them, Rasmussen was the guy who, I don't know if he was a quality player, but he was a guy who, if you put him in the box, things happened.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, there's Rasmussen. Who else? That's me on £2 million players. That'd been a waste of time.
Maybe there's something there about you don't get cheap strikers who are any good.
Well, I mean,
you can pick up midfield players and defenders and develop them, but strikers are...
And the other problem is everybody's wanting most throughout the world, throughout Europe, many teams are playing 4-2-3-1. Mm-hmm. And the one, they all want him to be that type of guy. So everybody's after that guy. And the problem you've got is, as you say, I mean, I keep making the calculation that Hartson and Sutton, and if you, with football inflation, Hartson and Sutton are £50 million players on £80,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they would be in today's market. Now, people talk about downsizing and all that nonsense. I don't think there's anybody out there who genuinely believes that we could afford and justify going out and spending £50 million and paying somewhere in the region of £100,000 a week or just under,
mm-hmm,
to a striker.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, all our other players would have to, you know, you'd have won, you'd be playing with Ibrahimovic up front and the Rangers team, mm-hmm, behind him. You know, it'd be a complete waste of time. But at the same time, based on that inflation-linked upscale, that effectively means that the £2 million player that we are buying is the equivalent of the £500,000 striker.
How long have we been doing the E-Tims and then this Celtic Underground?
Some many years.
It's been a long time. I wrote articles at the beginning for the E-Tims where I bemoaned the fact that we could never find a decent goalkeeper. And one of the things I said with no fear of contradiction was, we will always have goal scorers because we always did.
Yep.
Now they can't get a goal scorer.
Now we've had the three best goalkeepers.
Yes.
Certainly in my time of being a Celtic fan, the three best goalkeepers have been the last three goalkeepers. And the challenge is strikers. But as I say, Everybody wants that type of striker. Everybody wants one. Is Lee Griffiths doing such a bad job, actually?
We used to even develop strikers. You know, we used to bring players through who were goal scorers. Wendell Larson was the exception, but they signed other players that proved to be effective strikers. Scott McDonald was a decent goal scorer, and who else did they buy in those years, 10, 15, 8 years ago? You know, there were decent players come through. Scoring goals was never an issue. Stopping them was.
To be fair, we scored goals this season.
Aye, but the strikers are the ones that are scoring them. But then that's the dynamic of the game you're talking about. That guy is... Maybe we're used to thinking that guy up front should be a goal scorer.
Yeah.
And maybe he's not.
It's a very old-fashioned approach to football that you have the two strikers up front and everybody else just plays to get the ball to them, when actually what we've got is an attacking four. And if you've got sufficient movement in the attacking four, somebody will score. Well, we're scoring 3-4 goals a game at the moment.
What you want of that front man is someone who can hold the ball up to bring the others forward.
Yeah.
And to cause the defence no end of disruption.
Someone to move about, and by their movement they create the space for Armstrong, Mackay, Stevens, Commons, Johansson to burst through from the middle and get the goal.
That's the only criticism I might have of Lee Griffiths, because I think his movement is intelligent. I think he's technically a good player, but he doesn't always hold the ball up as well as you might want. Maybe that's not fair, because you used to see the ball get up to heart, as you say, Hartson and Sutton, and who were like rocks.
Yeah.
Defenders bounced off them. No one's going to bounce off Lee Griffiths.
No.
He's not built that
No, but actually, I think if Guidetti knuckled down and did what Dyla wants him, I think Guidetti could be.
He could.
He looks like a strong boy.
He does. And he shows flashes of intelligence. You know, the setup for the last second goal in the cup final was beautiful, so was. And he just laid it off. But it's a conundrum as to who will stay and who will go, and what will be next season.
Yeah, well, so before next season, we've got St Mirren on Friday night. So what would be your team, and what's your prediction for Friday night?
Well, if they play the way they've played recently, they should win comfortably. And that would stretch the lead to 8 points. I think that would almost sound the death knell of Aberdeen's title hopes.
Yeah.
But the last time we had a chance to stretch it to 9 points, we blew it against St Johnson.
Yeah, although to be fair, we'd had a series of hard games in a row, and we've had the international break, and I think Ronnie Dyer's allowed some of the players to go off on holiday for a week and things like that.
But it'll be interesting to see what team he picks, because Aimer Beattle played the other night. So he's not playing in until today. So whether or not he's fit, whether he's able to play a full 90 minutes, I don't know. I mean, the team more or less picks itself if they're all fit.
With the 12 that you won up front?
No, the squad picks itself. It's just a matter of combining players. I think it's fairly obvious that Mackay Stevens and Stuart Armstrong will probably play, because they'll be fresh.
Will they be fresh? They've been off, aye?
Yeah.
And Lee Griffiths?
Yes, of course. And Collins.
So we've actually got a fresh group, and based on what you're saying about Beaton, I could see the left half and right half being Johansson and Brown.
Possibly.
Not that, you know, everybody agrees that Johansson's best position is not there, but it could easily
be. Maybe it would be Armstrong playing that position.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Which would still allow Johansson to go forward.
Yeah, I don't know if, from what he's done so far, I don't know if Ronnie Dyla sees that, but you never know.
I wonder. I don't necessarily see Armstrong as a wide left player in the long term. There's more to him than that.
Yeah, I think actually he could be a number 10, the schemer you're talking about.
Yeah, he's a very intelligent player. And there's something of refreshing about Mackay Stevens. He seems to have a joy about playing.
Yeah, I was just going to say, as people often say, he plays with a smile on his face.
He does indeed. There was a really good thing on that, a teammates thing on Celtic TV. They did with Guy Stevens the other day. Normally, they give them more time to get to know their teammates.
Yep.
But the usual question is, who's the most intelligent player? And 9 out of 10 of them will say Craig Gordon. Although others said, because he's older. Whatever that means. But Mackay Stevens mentioned that the most intelligent was probably Stuart Armstrong. He says, although he will have you believe he's doing a law degree, he's really doing a standard grade modern studies. Which I thought was quite droll.
Anyway, I need to head off and get back to work. I need, what's the score? I need a definitive number.
I would hope it's about 4-0.
Okay. Well, with that, I'll say thanks very much, Lucky Moore. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
So I hope you enjoyed edition 243 of the Celtic Underground podcast. Edition 244, pretty much in the can now, with St Anthony, another fantastic interview. And things are inexorably moving towards podcast number 250. It's going to be a really special one. No idea what, but it will be. Maybe with a nomad or something. Anyway, this was me, Harry Brady, saying, hope you enjoyed that with Lucky Moore. Good night. Good night. They take your pride. Turn.